You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
All right, so elephant seals, Angie. Do you know I've seen these on the beach in California?
What can they teach us?
For instance, the elephant seal is the only known animal capable of collapsing their lungs, and they do this during a dive.
Many species are in crisis and need your help. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Angie, is going to be a fun one. I feel it. I feel it. Feel it.
I was staying up really late last night watching videos about the species of the week because I was just so impressed by their physiology, their behavior, everything. This is a very impressive animal, so kudos to you for suggesting it.
Yes, well, I've got to give a shout out to Rob Lang again at Underdone Comics, because last week we did the Saiga, and it had this wonderful nose, this incredible nose for an antelope, and Rob let us post one of his comics, and it's hilarious comics. So go to our Facebook if you haven't seen it. And it shows a Saiga and an elephant seal chatting, which is hilarious. So we have next week, hopefully next week, big species coming. And Angie conducted an amazing interview from the field. This conservation expert was in the field. We're going to leave you hanging this week on it.
Indonesia, somewhere in Indonesia. How about, we'll give him that.
Okay. But he's in Africa right now.
Yes.
So we have to get his approval before we post it. So we're scrambled a little bit. And we were like, oh, no. So we came up with the elephant seal as a sit-in. And I'm glad we did. It's amazing.
Oh, I'm so glad. We're definitely on the theme of extra large noses. So that's fun. That's fun for everyone. And definitely for me. And yeah. But yes, this is the physiology. This is our first species of seal that we've covered to date. So you'll learn a lot of facts about seals, things that I didn't even know, how they're separated into their different groups, and just amazing physiology. Being marine mammals that live in the ocean is just incredible. Let alone that seal face is just so stinking cute. Yeah, I mean, I sometimes think some of the lab mixes or the retriever mixes of dogs, when you just, if you like pull their ears back or hide their ears, their faces look like a seal. So. You can smooch it and pretend your dog's a seal, because you wouldn't want to smooch a real seal. That would be not good.
No. Well, we can ask, you know, I was going to say, shout out to Jim Winepress, because, you know, I'll ask him if he's smooched his seals. He's always training his seals out there in New York, and he's posting on social media. And so I always enjoy seeing him out there with his. So I'll have to ask him when I talk to him.
Yeah,
next.
I'm pretty sure the protocol is pretty tight about the smooching of seals. However.
Yeah. They blow them a kiss. I've seen that.
Especially in the other thing too, if they have stinky fish breath, they might be cuter from a distance, right?
we won't go there without you and John, maybe it's sushi or something. And there's just something about the ocean. I was just a couple weeks ago with a really good friend, and we were just out looking at the ocean, and there's just something about the ocean, Angie. I just don't know what it is. Like, we always love these species. It's just so hypnotic.
It's very hypnotic.
The ocean's just hypnotic.
Well, and I'm a water sign. I'm a Cancer, and I grew up on Lake Michigan, which for a lot of people that aren't familiar think that, oh, it's a lake, but it's really a great lake. And so it has waves. I mean, some 3, 4, 5, 6 footers and storms, maybe not that high. Anyways, but it's a, and you can't see across it. So it's like an ocean, but there's no salt and no sharks in it. So it's pretty wonderful for that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just always the same thing, Chris. I've always been mesmerized by the water. I came from a big family of people that love being out on the water, whether it was fishing or boating. And so, yeah, I think so. It's just so mysterious. And we're going to dive into that with the elephant seal today. Mm-hmm. Pardon the pun. I've been waiting for that all day. But
yes, yes.
But what they do and where they go, there's still so much we don't know about their migration and about how they do what they do. And of course we're going to discuss too some of the amazing physiology, because that's where we come in as the physiology experts, but it still is fascinating and mesmerizing and hypnotic and all of those words. And then you put this picture of an elephant seal with it, especially the male, out in front of the water. And it's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it is. It is. And let me ask you a quick question, because I've got some surprises for you today. Were there any seals in Lake Michigan or in the Great Lakes up there?
No. It's what my gut instinct says, but I'm not a seal expert. I'm just a beginner.
Yes. Well, you will be today at the end of this podcast. You'll be somewhat of an expert.
Hopefully.
So do you know, are there any seals in fresh water? Do you know? All right. I'll stump you.
I was going to say, I would say no, but I feel like I'm tricked right now.
You might be. You might be. Maybe.
In front
of
tens of thousands of people that listen to us. Just kidding.
we do. We've got hundreds of thousands. Yeah. We've got thousands of listeners. So, and speaking of listeners, it's a good point to jump in. I want to thank the listeners that have been sharing lately on social media. Please, we take notice, and it's been amazing. The response has really deep thought this week. You know, Angie and I, we love doing this podcast. We love spreading the knowledge. And, you know, in the past year and a half, we've
covered. Speak for yourself, Chris. I just love learning about animals and talking.
I know. But you know, think about it.
No,
Angie.
We've covered sharing.
You know, nearly 80 species. You know, I think we're like 73 species.
It's been that many. Yeah.
We've covered a ton, and
they're still letting us on the free airwaves. That's impressive.
Yes, we keep putting it out. We still have people. We had downloads in Rwanda last week. It was amazing. I love looking at the map. So, you know, we've covered all these species. We've got a global look of what's going on out there, and it's not particularly good news. And we're going to, you know, be taking some action here in the future on this podcast to really empower you, because really thinking about it, you know, Angie and I are just delivering information, and we've made changes in our own personal lives, how we, you know, deal with plastics and things like that. But the heroes aren't Angie and I. You're the heroes. The listeners are the heroes. You're the ones that are sharing this information. And if you can make change, positive change in your lives, join our movement, make the earth a better place for these creatures, you know, you're the hero. And so when you share those episodes, it made me really think about it this week. And I'm like, man, you guys are amazing. You're the heroes. Please keep helping us grow. This message needs to get out. The animals need our help. I mean, the environment needs our help. And so this is just one catalyst to capture that energy. So thank you. Thank you. You're the ones changing the world. You're the conservation heroes. You know, you're the ones that Angie and I look at and just, you know, we love you. And so thank you. So please keep sharing. Please keep doing and listening and all the things that you're doing.
Absolutely, Chris. Well said. And thank you so much, everyone. Yes, for joining the movement and caring about wildlife and conservation and the environment. And I just think that every little tidbit of knowledge and or excitement or passion that you can impart on somebody that you know or love or a friend or even a new person that you meet, mm-hmm. get them fired up and excited about animals they've never heard about, like the Saiga and other really cool creatures that probably some people have never heard of. So passing that along is just huge, getting people excited. Now, one of my mottos has always been, you never know who's going to be the next Jane Goodall. And which it was just her mm-hmm, birthday this mm-hmm. past week. So happy birthday to her.
I know.
Maybe someday she'll grace us with her presence on this podcast. That would be.
Yes.
That would be.
The ultimate.
Yeah. That would be Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Like 1,000 times. I mean.
It's between us and Corbin racing to get that interview first. You know, I know we just talked to him about it. We're racing each other. We're going to beat you, Corbin. I know you're listening. We're going to beat you.
I'm just saying. I mean, she is like, wow. I mean, we all know that Leonardo's like, wow, for me. But
We're working on that one. Don't give up. Who gets to conduct that one, me or you?
Please, Chris.
I got it.
Have you learned nothing this past couple years?
And if we could do it live, you'll just fly out here to LA, you know, and see us. So.
I doubt he lives in LA. I feel like he's more of a Paris guy. Don't you think?
Paris? I don't know where he lives. I don't know. I have to look.
I clearly don't stalk him that much. So.
No. All right. So elephant seals, Angie, do you know I've seen these on the beach in California?
Yay. Well, that's why I thought this is such a great species for you. And maybe you can go snap us some pictures. And I found some places where they have breeding colonies that I'll get to in the podcast. So all of our California fans can maybe go check them out. And that Chris. So yeah.
You know what I remember about it? It was in San Simeon. So that's up near like Hearst Castle, north of San Luis Obispo when I was getting my undergrad. Do you know what I noticed about them? They're all laying on the beach. You know what I saw a lot of? Ticks crawling on the beach. Ticks! They're like, it's a feast, and they just came out of the bushes, all these ticks, these poor elephant seals. Oh, but they're gorgeous. Not the ticks, the elephant seals are.
Yeah.
Me and ticks. Yeah, you know, me and ticks.
I know, Chris, and some researchers hypothesize that we're going to see more ticks in the years to come because of global climate change. So, and those poor elephant seals, geez.
I know. We need more possums, like Corbin said. They eat all those ticks.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So stay tuned towards the end because I found a really good study on great whites and elephant seals. And they've been doing a longitudinal study off the Farallon Islands off San Francisco, which has a pretty healthy population of great whites, and elephant seals come and rest on those islands. So they've been able to study the interaction between the two. So it was really interesting. They got some really interesting data towards the end that you want to stick to. Now, Angie and I are talking about elephant seals, pinnipeds. It's a true seal. Now we've covered a pinniped.
Should we describe them?
Okay. Yes. That's where we're going. The big nose as you make the hand gesture. We covered the ones with here's my hand gesture. Which pinniped did we cover with this one?
The walrus?
That likes to. Yes. Yes. So we've covered walruses, but this is a true seal.
Correct. Right?
Huge. Now what's bigger? The elephant seal or the walrus?
Ooh. The elephant seal.
Yes, you're right. Yay, Woo-hoo! Dr. Angie. Dr. Angie's in the house tonight, folks.
I showed up with my coffee and my tap water.
But yeah, southern, so there's two elephant seals. The southern elephant seal can reach 20 feet long or 6 meters. That is huge. And these are the males. Way up to, wait for it. It's almost elephant size. I mean, I'll get to why they call them elephant seals. Way up to 8,800 pounds or 4,000 kilograms. Enormous. These are huge.
Yeah, I have not seen them in the wild. And so to prepare for this podcast, it's one thing to put those numbers out or read those numbers, but that's where I went to the good old YouTube and wow, Chris, their size. That's what I was not prepared for. That's what blew me out of the water with this podcast was the size.
They're big. They're big. And the females are about half the length at 3 meters or 10 feet, but only weigh 2,000. Yeah. I mean, only, only 2,000 pounds.
Only a ton.
Yeah. Just a ton. Only. But compared to the males, holy gosh. So I was going to say that they have these long noses, and they're not named elephant seals because they're the largest seals. They were named elephant seals because of the nose, right? They have, the males have this really long snout, and it does have some purpose.
Well, Chris, it's hard to describe. So we'll definitely put some pictures on our show notes. So make sure and check out our website or Google image it. But it's, yeah, the nose is large and inflated. Which, and they have a term for it.
Proboscis. The large proboscis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does. It resembles an elephant trunk. Not nearly as long.
No.
Obviously as an elephant's trunk, but very distinguishable. I mean, very, like you can't miss it.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's huge, and it does have some physiological function. So.
Yes.
Like the Saiga last week, it does have purpose. And it does look a lot like a Saiga. It's a little bit longer than the northern elephant seal. The southern elephant seal is a little bit shorter, their noses. Mm-hmm. Now, they are true seals because they have no ear flaps. So when we get to evolution, I've got some really cool stuff. You know, I'll kind of remind the listeners of what we covered in Walrus, the differences between true seals and what's not considered a true seal. Now, they have this broad, flat face, and they have the hugest eyes, right? They're like puppy dog eyes.
Gorgeous almost. Eyes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then they have what? Silver brown coloration. And then
generally brown. Males are usually a little darker brown, and females can be a little bit more tan in color. But similar to other species we've talked about, they have that counter shading where they're darker on their dorsal or top part and lighter colored ventrally or on their bottom.
Which is so interesting. Like, you know, just all the aquatic species that have that to avoid predation or even predators. You know, think of a great white shark, which we're going to talk a little bit about today, you know, dark on top, white underneath to see that. Now, this was interesting. And there's a reason, I think there's part of a reason why we see this today, but the northern elephant seals range generally off California, Baja California, down in Mexico, but they can range up into Alaska. So they do go up the West Coast, you know, British Columbia, all the way up into Alaska.
Yeah, I read the southern tip of Vancouver Island, things like that.
Now they do prefer islands, but they do come on the mainland. You know, like I saw them in California, they do at times. Now the southern's much broader, wide range, huge range. Subantarctic to Antarctic conditions. So it's freezing cold, but they love it. They love it. So down there in New Zealand, you know, where I was at last year, South Australia, southern tip of Africa, and the southern tip of South America, down to the Antarctic is where the southern elephant seals range.
Yeah.
I think the northerns might have been a little bit more spread out on the Pacific, but we'll get to their conservation story because they were almost wiped out. I mean, they almost went extinct. They were on the cusp. And that kind of leads me into why care. You know, thinking about a major, this is a predator, a carnivore. So they are out there feeding on squid, fish, crustaceans. But they also are prey for other species. So they're not the top of the food chain in the ocean, but they're up there. And in 1910, a century ago, there was only less than 100 northern elephant seals left in the world.
Well, the southerns were pretty much wiped out too. I'm not sure the exact
almost,
numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Almost. Yep. And what happened was at the end of the 1800s, with whale populations in decline, they went and started taking elephant seals for the blubber, right? And the oil. So they were almost hunted to extinction, just like we talked about the bison a couple weeks ago. They were down to 600. So what that means is this population, both of them really, but really the northerns, talk about a tremendous genetic bottleneck. Tremendous. And so again, here we have a species. Genetics are not as diverse as they should be. So a disease plus all these other pressures with the ocean. I mean, ocean health is such a concern right now. Plastic. I mean, Angie, just this week in the news. Did you read the article about the sperm whale off Italy? Yeah.
Yes.
50 pounds of plastic in her stomach, and she was pregnant. 50 pounds of plastic in the Mediterranean.
That's like, so sad.
Oh, it's horrific. It's horrific. So again, you're the heroes. The listeners are the heroes. We need to make changes. You can help us do this. We can impact thousands of people around the globe, not just here in the United States, but for our listeners down in Australia, New Zealand, Asia. We have listeners in Asia, Africa, and Europe. All of us in South America. We have listeners down in Brazil and
Colombia.
Colombia. Mm-hmm. Colombia, yeah. Thanks, Anna. Did Anna go home for a couple weeks? Listen, so we have a good friend back in Florida from Colombia. So, you know, you can help. You can help. And we're going to talk about towards the end some of the things you can do each week with our tips for conservation. Those are things that you can adopt easily and, you know, help us. Please help us.
Yes. And you should care about elf and seals if we didn't already describe them. We probably didn't make them sound too cute with their large inflated nose. Well, and if we haven't already convinced you to love the elf and seals and protect the ocean, hopefully the rest of the podcast will do that. And we may have not made the male sound super cute with this big inflated nose. But, and someone may be argue it's only a face a mother could love. But I disagree. You gotta pull up a picture and look at one. Interestingly, the female elephant seals do not have this large inflated nose. So if you're more of a seal traditionalist, like you want your seal to look like you're, like you just put your hands around your dog's face and pulled the ears back.
Yes.
If you want it to look like that, then that's going to be your female monk seals because they do not have this exaggerated, elephant-like nose, which we'll discuss some of the reasons and hypothesis why when we get to behavior. And Chris, a couple other reasons why people should care about elephant seals. Well, first and foremost, you know, being out in California, that the northern elephant seals are a huge attraction for tourists in the annual Nuevo State Reserve in California and in other different places. So visitors can watch these magnificent animals haul up onto shore during the breeding season and have these amazing breeding behaviors, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the podcast. So that alone is really special, I think. And I highly vote that you should go do that and take some video for us.
I will.
But from a physiological point of view, researchers actually have a lot of interest in these animals. And they hit some records with some of their extraordinary ocean stunts, I'll call them, for lack of better terms. So, for instance, the elephant seal is the only known animal capable of collapsing their lungs. And they do this during a dive. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways they're able to do this is they have this like surfactant or lubricant that helps them collapse their lungs. And currently that molecule or whatever that compound is being researched by the Scripps Institute just down the road from you in San Diego for potential benefits to preemies, to babies that are born with immature lungs. So, I mean, what? Like my mom, that makes my oxytocin just like, you know, oh my gosh, like, yes, helps it, you know. Because with preemies, I mean, preemies are living longer and healthier now than ever before. Mm-hmm. But, and for those of you that aren't as familiar with how things develop as far as embryology goes and development, your lungs are one of the last things to mature before the baby is born, before you're born. And there's all sorts of debate about what triggers a baby being born. Is it the mom triggering it? Is her a hormone cascade by her? Or is it some researchers think that it's a hormone cascade actually from the fetus that basically says, okay, my lungs are mature. So now let's start this cascade of crazy hormonal pathways and that basically then start the uterine contractions, which is what a woman going into labor. So anyways, really cool stuff. Sorry to dork out about that for a minute.
No.
It's just so cool and so connected. And I think everybody or most everybody knows, has a friend or knows of someone that was born prematurely and say, you know, was able to be saved by some of this technology. And if they, but some babies are born too young to survive. And so if, oh my goodness, if an elephant seals a compound in their lungs, a surfactant in their lungs can help researchers, like, mm-hmm. That's incredible, Chris. That's just incredible to me.
You know, it makes me think of every species we're covering. There's something we're learning about them almost. So it makes me think of the Tasmanian devil. I'm making some good friends down in Tasmania. Googs, shout out to Googs down there in Tasmania. But I was talking to her and I want to try to get down there, Angie. So if I get down to Tassie, I know we have some Aussie friends are like, you know, come out and see us in Australia. So you might have to come with me. And I'm laughing with her and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go trek and look for Tassie tigers. Cause she said she's heard them, but she has never seen them. And she was here in the States for a while and moved back down there. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to go trek and I'm going to go find some Tassie tigers and I'm going to record the sounds. And then I thought for a minute, wait a minute, this isn't New Zealand. You can go trekking all over New Zealand and you're safe. There's nothing there that would kill you. Nothing. You know, some of the food's okay. It's good food. You know, it's decent. There's everything in Australia will kill you. Like, I don't want to be going trekking through Tasmania. I thought about it for a second. I was like,
Yeah, I feel like I would like to go to the Australia Zoo. That's about my
yes.
My comfort level, maybe the Great Barrier Reef, but yeah. Or with a guide. I would definitely want a couple nice young Aussie gentlemen to make sure that I'm, or ladies.
Lee, I got one for you. You know, Lee down there, Lee works down there in Australia and he's always posting stuff on Facebook. So shout out to Lee down there and he'll take you. He'll take you to the Daintree. You can go find the cassowaries and the salty crocs and the platypus and all the things we talked about. The whole point of that story was, Angie.
Where
are we going?
Like, what are you talking about? I have two more really important points about why you should care about elephant seals. So let's wrap it up, buddy.
Let me wrap it up. The whole point of that wasn't to say hi to Googs. It was to say Tassie tigers. Oh, hold on. Yeah, Tassie tigers. Is it Tassie?
Do those even exist?
Oh my God, why am I saying Tassie tigers?
You've been saying Tassie tigers?
Did I say Tassie tigers the whole time?
The whole time. The whole freaking time.
I'm not on drugs, I promise you.
And I'm thinking like, aren't those extinct? Like, I'm pretty sure those are extinct. Like, I didn't know if it was a joke. I thought it was going to be a joke.
Tassie devils, Angie. The Tasmanian devils is what I was thinking.
Do you want to back this up or do you want to leave this in here? Because it's so hilarious.
No. I'm gonna leave it. And the Tasmanian devil with the transmutable cancer.
Yes. Oh my God.
Has cancer researchers around the world saddened by their plight, but excited to learn about this cancer. That was the point of that story. Talking about Tassie tigers that went extinct a long time ago. Why care about elephant seals?
I should have rescued you sooner. I was just going with it. We don't have a script here, folks. I would just what they call like ebbing and flowing, or there's some term when in stand up or not.
Didn't you know Tassie tigers exist now?
Oh, that's what it is. It's in sketch. It's what, sketch comedy, or it's the comedy improv. It's an improv.
Oh, it's
when you're doing improv. When you're with a partner. Yes. You can never do like negatives. If they say something, you like have to go with it. So that's what I was. I should have studied at Second City in Chicago, but I never did. But I have friends that have done that, and they that's what you do. Like you, like whatever wacky idea they come up with, you have to go with it. Yeah. So I was like sketching. I was like, okay, Tassie tigers. Okay, I don't know where this.
He's gonna go look for mammoths. Next I'm gonna go look for mammoths in Siberia.
Like that I would actually believe you would do that. So, anyways, oh my gosh. All right, so wow.
I'm just high on life. Okay,
wow. Go ahead. Okay, so. You should also care about elephant seals because and another really cool – you'll like this because you're a space dork. Another really cool reason to care about elephant seals is because they've been used in research related to the effects of weightlessness on bone density because they spend 90% of their time basically buoyant, right, in the water. So NASA has a lot of interest – in these efforts to basically, how do we in space, how do you counteract weightlessness on bone density in astronauts? Okay.
Oh, cool.
Very cool, cool. Right?
Okay, that's cool.
And
yeah.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
And the last really cool thing, Chris, is we're going to get into their physiology, their dive physiology, and just the record-breaking lengths that they dive, depths that they dive.
Mm-hmm.
But researchers also want to, I don't know if exploit is the right word, but utilize potentially this or capture it somehow, because they think that elephant seals can greatly aid human efforts to explore and map these deep oceans. Because sometimes instruments have a hard time dealing with the pressure.
Oh, wow. Wow. They're amazing. Like, I mean, they're amazing.
Amazing. What? That's crazy.
It's so funny just to pick the species and then just the stuff we've learned about them. It's just incredible. Since I went on that tangent about Tassie tigers versus Tassie devils, Tassie tigers are extinct. Tassie devils have the cancer that they spread by biting each other. Okay. So I'm going to go through evolution as fast as I can. Ready?
Oh,
hold on
no.
tight. Hold on tight.
Oh,
hold on tight.
No. I actually didn't read anything. So take your time.
Okay.
I want to
no,
learn.
No. There's some good stuff. There's some really good stuff. All right. So we have two species of elephant seal, the northern elephant seal, the southern elephant seal. Scientific name, Moronga angustrostris. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's a big one. Angustrostris. A. Moronga A.
I believe you.
Then the southern elephant seal is Moronga leonine. So that's easier. Leonine. Okay. This damn scientific names. Go back to like episode 2 of our podcast trying to pronounce this stuff. Now, I do know this one's easy. Pinnipeds is the clawed.
Love that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Elephant seals are from the family Phocidae, which is true seals, which we've already talked about. They don't have the ears. So that's monk seals, harbor seals, ring seals.
So just to be clear, Chris, the true seals, they have ears, but they're internal. They don't have the outer ear flap or what you would think when you see an ear, or I think the technical term is auricle. I hope.
Right. Yeah. No. You're right. And it's
one.
Leopard seals are part of that. Mm-hmm. So we have to cover leopard seals one day. Now we did the walrus. They're the family of Otobenidae. Then the family of Otariidae is sea lions, fur seals, and they have the external ears where you can see ears. And they're cute. I mean, they're all cute. Now, they are. Now, we talked about pinniped evolution and the walrus. Basically, a bear-like creature came and became the walrus and eared seals. And then they think an otter-like animal evolved into other seals. But now there's a bunch of debates because of molecular genetics. It's the same every time we talk about this. So they do agree that there was a common ancestor about 30 million years ago. The elephant seals or phocids evolved about 15 million years ago, long time. Elephant seals, as we know them today, emerged about 2 million years ago. Now, here is a fun fact I learned. This is, again, why I love doing this. Can you, outside of the seals or the pinnipeds, can you name two of the closest families to them? I just gave you some hints.
The grizzly bear.
Ursidae. Good. Boing, boing, boing.
Thank
yes.
You.
Good job.
Thank you. It's because I was looking at YouTube videos about their skulls. And
oh, okay.
Yeah. It's so crazy. Like they just showed like a black bear skull and of course, you know, some canines. And then they show the grizzly bear, which we're going to cover soon. And I probably shouldn't give away all of our secrets.
But secrets. It's okay.
Top secret. Many people care, right?
Yeah, I know.
And but anyways, and of course it's the largest land mammal skull is a grizzly bear.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For a carnivore, I'm sorry. Obviously for an elephant, whatever.
Yeah.
For a carnivore.
Yeah.
And But then they put the elephant seal next to it, and its skull is massive compared to a grizzly. And then we'll get to it when we talk about nutrition and stuff, but they are carnivore, and so they still have those massive canines on top and bottom. And I mean, almost it kind of looked like a grizzly skull. So, okay, that's my one guess.
Good. No, that's good. That's true. That's the closest. Now, who else is close?
Ooh.
That we love. We love them. Hyenas? Love them. No. It's that class of animals that are just naughty. Going back, tap on the shoulder, and they roll ferrets. Over like prairie dog. Well, or mustelids.
Okay.
Okay. So bears and mustelids are their closest relatives. Wow. Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
I
love that.
I got so excited when I read that.
I didn't see that one coming, but that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah, the family tree of the pinnipeds is just so complex, but you do have the three major classes of them. And now, Angie, here we go. Another fun fact. So other than the elephant seal being the largest pinniped ever, because again, some of these aquatic animals, it's hard to find bones and things like that. But so the elephant seal is the largest. I went and looked at the smallest seal.
Aww.
And I'm sure you have no idea who this one is.
I definitely don't, but I need it in my life right now. And I need a picture.
Yes. Well, let me tell you where you're going to go. Okay. You're going to go to Siberia.
Okay.
And you're going to go to Lake Baikal. Mm-hmm. It's landlocked. So this is the only exclusive freshwater seal on Earth.
Wow. I did not know that. And
yes. This is so exciting. The Baikal seal.
The Baikal seal.
And it's one of the smallest seals in the world. Mm-hmm. It only gets about 4.5 feet long or 1.7 meters. Can weigh up to about 150 pounds or 70 kilograms.
Perfect. So, I love it already.
And there's about 80,000 of them in that lake.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Landlocked. They're landlocked.
So it's just that lake.
Oh, and their faces are, oh my God, Angie, their faces, they have huge whiskers, huge eyebrows. They're like just so cute. They're so cute. Oh, so anyways, I thought that was cool.
I love it. That's super fun.
Now, here's some interesting facts because we're about to jump into physiology. Now, the southern elephant seals have a lifespan of about 20 to 22 years, but the northern's only 9 years. And I was like, And I didn't see anything why, but I was wondering, like, is it because of that genetic bottleneck? So that was a surprising fact. And then not to get too much into eye physiology, because we do want to get into some of the stuff about them diving. They actually have more rods than cones in their eyes to see in low light conditions. So when they're doing those deep dives, right?
Yes. And the reason for that is because the rods are in charge of the black and whites, right? The shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
And the cones are in charge of the colors. So you said they have more rods, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And so, yeah. Chris, a little quiz for you, a little physiology quiz.
Oh, gosh.
For the photoreceptors with the cones, what colors, what wavelength colors do they absorb?
Green and red? Yellow?
You got 2 out of 3.
It's green, red, yellow.
Green.
Purple?
Red.
No. Blue.
Oh, yellow.
Blue? Do they see blue?
Blue.
But blue, oh gosh, there's a, blue's weird. Well, that's a whole different podcast for a whole different day. Radiolab did that one where this tribe doesn't see blue, right? Like,
oh, cool.
Like they think in history. That stuff's bizarre. Okay, cool. Okay. Now, I know you're going to talk about the nose.
But it makes sense with the shades of gray, more rods would be helpful right in the water.
So they're trichromatic, right? They can see three colors where some animals are dichromatic. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, elephant seals do go through an annual, they call it catastrophic molt, where...
Okay, Chris, wait a second. This is where I got hung up for about an hour or so.
Run with it. So it's pretty cool.
Well, it's – yes. But so what Chris is talking about is – and I don't know if we've touched on it in the podcast, but a lot of animals drop either their fur or their feathers throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it molting. Mm-hmm. And basically they take the old – they get rid of the old to make room for the new. And we'll have to save more of the physiology about how and why birds do this when we get to a bird species. But yeah – elephant seals undergo an annual, so once a year, what they call catastrophic mold. Mm-hmm. That's not me being dramatic. Mm-mm. That's really what the researchers call it, where they shed the entire outer layer of their skin and their hair or their peelage. Mm-hmm. And it basically like comes off in sheets onto the beach. So of course they're going to do this molting behavior when they're hauled out on land. They're not going to do it in the, you know, in the ocean. And it's just, they look like I said, hung up and watching a lot of videos and pictures. They look like they're falling apart. And just the way it comes out in like clumps and sheets. And I'm used to the Bactrian camels that I worked with. They,
oh yeah,
in the summertime, because they grow a very hardy winter coat, mm-hmm, because they're in the desert, but it's obviously, you know, in Mongolia area. And so it's like freezing at night and then hot during the day. So in the summertime, it just, or late spring, it just like rolls off. But with the elephant seals, it's even more dramatic in the fact that during this molting process, the skin underneath is super sensitive and they stay out of the water to protect the soon to be new exterior. And sometimes too, you'll almost see like bumps or like, mm-hmm, like scabs over it. It's a process. And it was like with the camels, it wasn't like that at all. And so females and young elephant seals will start out the process from April and May. So that makes sense, like late, mm-hmm, spring. Mm-hmm. Young moles will molt from May to June, and the adults finish out this dramatic molting in July to August. But I just, with the camels, with birds, it makes sense to me. And with camels, it makes sense because of the great temperature changes. Mm-hmm. I guess what I got hung up on, and maybe you can help me out with, is why the seals do this.
Yeah.
That sounds like a seal.
It's a good guess. Aquatic.
I mean, the ocean does, the ocean's going to warm in the summer somewhat, I guess.
Yeah. It's a skin regeneration. I don't know. Parasites. I mean, there are parasites in the oceans, but yeah.
Oh, that's a good hypothesis, yeah. Maybe for parasites. But what's really interesting, Chris, too, about this is, a study out of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, which is a great, very prestigious journal. So scientists at the UC, University of California, Santa Cruz, showed the elephant seals when they shed, what it does is it releases a significant amount of mercury into the surrounding waters and makes those coastal waters where they're hauled out nearby a lot higher in mercury. And this is in the Año Nuevo State Reserve. So what researchers are hypothesizing is because of industrial emissions, mostly from burning coal. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you, coal, very much. They've also increased the amount of mercury in the marine environment 2 to 4-fold over pre-industrial levels. And of course, you know, at this rate, global emissions, mm-hmm, are going to continue to increase over the next several decades if we don't get our stuff together. And all this is just recycling back into the coastal environment. And it's a real problem. So that's what I'm wondering, like, are they trying to get, because we know that animals higher up in the, mm-hmm, food chain accumulate mercury because of the smaller animals that they eat and absorb. And then a lot of these animals will store it because mercury is never, you know, it doesn't go away. It just like moves from one place to the other. And I know they store it like in their blubber. But I'm like, are they trying to get, and obviously some's in their hair if this is what's in their skin. So I'm like, maybe it's like a new way to try to get rid of those toxic levels. I don't know. I just thought that was very interesting and obviously kind of relates to what we're doing to our environment here, right? Environment.
Yeah, it just goes back to the beginning, you know, we're talking about the oceans and ocean health and our listeners as heroes. So, you know, we need to keep working. And luckily it's been in the news, you know, this stuff.
Yeah, well, these researchers at UC, Santa Cruz are like my new conservation heroes of the week. I mean, they're awesome. They're doing awesome work. They're fighting for these guys. They're trying to learn more about them, about their physiology. And so in order to help protect them. So.
Yep. Now jump into nutrition real quick. You know, these are elephant seals are migratory feeders. They prefer mainly squid, but they will eat some fish and crustaceans. So in the northern hemisphere, they have found males as far north as the Aleutian Islands off Alaska.
Wow.
The females prefer to forage or eat off Oregon or Washington Pacific Northwest in the U.S. The southerns are ranging all over Antarctica. So that's what they're down. Now they've done a lot of satellite tracking, and some of the stuff's very interesting that these seals spend very little time on the surface, that they just come up to breathe and they spend most of their time underwater. What Angie was talking earlier, Angie, this one, a whale did beat this record. They measured this one elephant seal that dove to a record of 2,388 meters
off Antarctica. That's insane.
And it stayed down for 120 minutes or almost for 2 hours.
Even two more hours. Insane. It's crazy.
Yeah. There was a whale that went deeper, but I mean, usually they're only under for 20 minutes and they go down to about 1,000 meters, but this was the record and they blew researchers out of the water with that. They were like, oh my God. And that goes into what you were saying earlier about why care. So things like we covered in blue whales, they slow their heartbeat, divert blood flow away from their extremities to their core organs. Their red blood cells have better potential to carry oxygen. They flatten their lungs like whales.
They have more, and they have more red blood cells as well.
Yeah. Just crazy physiology. I'd never would have expected that.
Well, Kristen, they also have a really large blood volume in general. So therefore they can store more oxygen when diving, and they have large sinuses in their abdomens to hold blood so they can store oxygen in their muscles. Of course, with increased myoglobin concentrations in the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty incredible. Well, Chris, the other thing too that perplexes researchers during these massive dives is the lack of sleep for extended periods of times. And records suggest that these animals conduct dive after dive after dive to these depths for these 20 to 70 minutes, for 24 hours a day, sometimes months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
They hypothesize that during the dive, they have to go so deep that it almost be almost might be like a form of sleeping because their metabolic rate is so low. So just wacky nuts. Stuff here. Really cool. They're the record holders. So that's incredible.
Yeah, for a pinniped, they go deep. They go deep. Yeah. And the things that eat them, great white sharks, and I've got some good data coming up that's really interesting. Obviously, orcas, king of the sea. Leopard seals will take pups or the young, so they can do that. And then I even read cookie cutter sharks will come out and take a little bite. And I remember that from Octonauts, right? Little cookie cutter sharks.
Yeah, it's funny. I told Xander asked what podcast I was doing tonight. And I was like, oh, elephant seal. He's like, oh, yeah, I saw an Octonauts about that. I'm like, oh, okay.
He put him on. We're going to have him back on. We're going to have Xander back on. Oh, he's so great.
Oh, he requested squirrels.
Make
that squirrels. Okay. Just put that out there in the universe. If any of our other listeners would like squirrels, let us know.
Let us know. We'll do Xander. We'll interview Xander again.
There are those really cool Technicolor squirrels maybe that we could do. That'd be fun.
Yeah. There's some.
We'll do squirrels someday at some point in time.
Yeah. We'll do that for our friend Angie down there. Our other Angie down in Gainesville.
Angie
she
number
loves
two.
Squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I have to tell her.
Well, Chris, just to touch on or add a little bit to the nutrition is with elephant seals, they have external whiskers called vibrissae. Probably not saying that right, but it helps them locate prey and navigate their environment. We've talked about that, I think, before in otters. Mm-hmm. And the vibrissae, I don't know, are connected to blood vessels and nerves and muscles. So they're really like an important, they're like our fingertips, right? And then inside their stomachs, they have what are called gastroliths. And I had to look that up. But gastrolith is basically like a stomach stone or a gizzard stone or a rock. Yeah. And I know that like birds do that and stuff. I guess I was just, I was very surprised with elephant seals that it was a part of their physiology, but it must be, it's probably because maybe their metabolism is so low during these dives. This is me totally just hypothesizing. I didn't read anything about speculating very much. Very good word. But yeah, I couldn't find out why they have them, but I'm wondering if it's because during their deep dives with low metabolic rate, you know, it helps keep things moving through their system. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Probably helps break stuff up.
Yeah. And then the other thing too, that always fascinates me, cause I'm a avid water drinker. Probably since I've been a child, the typical question is, well, do fish drink water? We drink a lot of water. So with seals, do you know if elephant seals drink water?
Yes.
No.
They do. Yeah. Cool. No, they absorb it.
Right.
They have a straw. There's tons of straws in the ocean. So
there are a lot, unfortunately. I hate to make fun of the ocean, but that's pretty funny, Chris. There are a lot of straws in the ocean, so they could just drink it out. Yeah.
Take one. And
but listeners are stopping that. Everybody's stopping their straw usage. Yeah. They're getting the metal reusable ones. But yeah, Chris, it's believed that these animals never drink water. Their source of water comes from the breakdown of fats.
Squid?
Yeah, their fat storage. Yeah. And they also have other physiological adaptations to conserve water in their body. So they have a really concentrated urine as an adaption.
Yeah, I did read that.
And of course, too, when...
It's not... I was going to say, it's not a good weight loss program for us. Like, wouldn't it be awesome if we just stopped drinking and then just fat would be converted to water?
Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
Don't do that. No. Don't do that. You will die quickly.
Very quickly.
You will die quickly.
Yes. Yes. But these guys are cool. I mean, when they come out for molting and or for breeding, when they're hauled out on the on the shore for or to have their pups for a long period of time, they're also not eating. They're fasting. So they're not eating and they're not drinking. And they're just that blubber. I mean, it's doing its job, right? Pretty cool.
This doesn't work at us.
That no, sucks. My blubber does not help me in any way, shape, or form.
No. Now, jumping to behavior, Angie, for spending most of their life out in the ocean, it's just crazy to think about.
Well, and they pretty much nailed it, Chris. Like, elephant seals spend the majority of their time, 90% or some, underwater in search of food. They can cover up to 60 miles a day when they head out to sea. So, I mean, the numbers that I read in different papers, some was 90%, some was 80% of their life. But yeah, I mean, pretty crazy. And they migrate, right? So when they're out to sea, I saw linear distances. So this doesn't even include the diving. So just linear distance of 21,000 kilometers a year. So that's some marathons, right? And that doesn't include diving, right? So yeah, I mean, just really, really, I mean, ocean, even though, you know, we see them on land and stuff at certain during breeding season and things, but they're pretty much out in the water doing their thing. Like you said, they can hold their breath for up to 100 minutes or longer than any non-cetacean type mammal. And females, their length, their dive is a little bit shorter. On average, it's about 20 minutes for females and about 60 minutes for males. And females actually tend to dive a bit deeper, probably due to the different prey that they eat. And when they're up for air, it's maybe 2 to 3 minutes and then they're back to work. So it's pretty crazy. But you can see the seals will be on shore, usually December through March during the mating season. And then again, beginning in April through August when they haul out for molting. So those are the times to see them. The northern elephant seals are probably mostly solitary when they're in the water. But of course they have these large aggregates during mating season on the shore when they haul out. And during the mating season, there's definitely a social hierarchy, which is really for those. I'm pretty jealous of these UC Santa Cruz researchers to get to study their behavior because there's some cool videos on YouTube. We'll put them on our show notes. But they have some really cool behaviors that they display in order to win over or win the females and to breed as many females as possible.
It's watching those videos and seeing elephant seals fight for mating. I just, you know, leading you to breeding that they call these males, the big ones, the giant battle hardened aggressive beach masters.
I love beach master.
That's great.
I'm going to start. They
are masters of the beach.
I'm going to start calling John the Beachmaster.
The Beachmaster. So, but the fights are just crazy. They do have this thickened skin around their necks, the older males. You know, so they do bleed a lot, but they have really thick skin there. So, you know, usually doesn't end in death like the Saiga last week. But yeah, I mean, just these males breed quite a few females, right?
Well, you touched on it exactly. I mean, a lot of times with the courtship and behavior, I always talk about, you know, what the male does for the female or what the female does for the male. And this one is from my understanding of it, the courtship is more like the males getting rid of the competition. So it's all about being the dominant male, arrives at the potential breeding site. And he'll spend months there fasting to ensure that he can mate with as many females as possible. And the way he establishes his dominance is basically, like you said, by fighting, vocal noises, different positions, different movements with his body to show the other males that he's deemed the dominant. And then they'll also show off their nose and make loud vocalizations to kind of, once again, show that they're the toughest guy. And the other thing, too, is during these battles, they like chest ram each other, too, which when they're kind of upright, and a seal is upright, I guess, as a seal can be, position, their chests kind of come in contact with each other. And I watched a video to understand how big these guys are. I found some videos that show it must have been a breeding male. Somehow he hauled up near beach and he was chest slamming a car, like a four-door
it's in New Zealand.
And just like there's nothing that people can
attack cars,
there's nothing people can do about it besides just like get out of the way because he's like moving this car with his like big chest. So anyway, so they're pretty impressive. And then since elephant seals, the males are polygynous, they basically need to, you know, score as many girlfriends as possible. And once he's done all this display to get rid of all the other males, this fighting, this vocalization, this chest, this, all this stuff, he'll basically throw a flipper. He basically, Chris, just throws a flipper over the side of the female, grips her neck and his teeth, and copulation begins. So the females, in my opinion, maybe not courted too much, just basically, she wins the strongest bull. Yeah. So male elephants are called bulls. And the other interesting behavior that a female will do is if a subordinate or non-dominant male does try to breed with her, she can release an audible, like, bawling sound of basically saying, like, hey, this is not, you know, this is not my guy. And then, of course, a dominant bull will come over and chase off the subordinate. So it's really just this very dynamic and very visual and
raunchy.
Like I said, just so cool. I wish I was, I wish I was one of these researchers because it's a lot of male to male. Like the males and they kind of have to be because they come up when they, you know, when they haul out for either breeding season or, I mean, there's a lot of them around, right? So. They need to be the tough guy in order to pass their genes along, right? So, yeah, pretty interesting. And then the other really cool thing that goes along the lines of them being related to carnivores or Ursidae is when the female is bred, she experiences delayed implantation. And we've talked about that before where that's where the egg and the sperm come together to create an embryo, but the embryo only divides a few times and becomes like a blastula, probably. And it doesn't implant in her uterus. So it just kind of hangs out, and delayed implantation in the elephant seal lasts about 3 months. So total gestation time is about a year. So they're probably pregnant about 9 months with this, or 3 month delayed implantation, then 9 months, which is basically allows for this yearly birthing interval, and where they all come out at the same time and they have, and they all have their pups, and they basically birth and breed from December to March, depending on, you know, where, what part of the world they're in. So the other thing that's kind of fascinating is when an offspring is born, Chris, how much do you think they weigh?
Oh, they're pretty small, like 50 pounds, maybe?
About 80 pounds. Yeah.
So they're not too big.
And in 4 feet. So, and they usually, twins are, I don't know if twins have been recorded. Usually it's just a single pup. And when they're born, they have this black fur. But as they're weaned, they shed their black coat and replaced by the lighter brown that we're more used to seeing. But super fascinating. I'm not sure if we covered this in walruses, but the milk produced by an elephant seal is crazy high in milk fat compared to other mammals. So human breast milk is about 4% milk fat. Cow milk is about 3.5% milk fat. Elephant seal, mommy elephant seal milk fat is 50% milk fat.
Wow, fat. Yeah, they grow fast too.
And yeah, so the pups gain weight like crazy on this really high milk fat. And the females really only lactate for about 27 days, about a month before they're weaned. And then once the weaned pup will stay close to the mom for a while, but then the mom basically leaves the pup behind and she goes off to sea. So the young groups of pups that all have been left alone on shore form a pod, and they'll stay up there. They'll basically hang out in this like teenager land or whatever, for up to 3 to 4 months without parental care. And that's when they learn to swim and surf. And that's probably when they're very susceptible to
predation,
predators and things like that.
No, and that's, I mean, it rolls good into conservation. I mean, even though these animals are classified as least concerned by the IUCN, there's still some worry there. The northern elephants went from, like we said, less than 100 to about 110,000 today, you know, off the west coast of the United States. The southern elephants are higher at 325,000, but remember, they have a much wider range, huge range, and they've suffered some decline. So the IUCN does note that there is some low survival of adult females or the pups. And a lot of this is the changing climate, that food reserves or food is changing where they can find food. And so they are finding that there has been some decline that they can't really pin yet on exactly why. But so we do got to keep an eye on them. It's just ocean health again is just horrific what's going on in the ocean. So to say that there won't be an effect on these populations would be naive, I think, that, you know, as the ocean continues to suffer, other species suffering, whales, fish, other things, that we're going to see this too in the elephant seals. Now, I do know there's an organization out there fighting for them, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's several, especially some of the bigger players like WWF. But one that was near and dear to my heart that I want to focus on is called the Marine Mammal Center. And they can be found at themarinemammalcenter.org. And Chris, the Marine Mammal Center is out there by you. They founded themselves in Sausalito, California. Beautiful part of the world. I've actually driven through there. I haven't spent too much time. Would love to spend more time. So check it out sometime on a field trip, perhaps. But the Marine Mammal Center is basically a center that has the mission to advance global ocean conservation through marine mammal rescue and rehabilitation, scientific research, and education, right? So all the bells and whistles. Love these guys. They're doing great work. They are taking care of these marine mammals that have been injured in the wild or are sick or diseased and rehabilitating them. And then, of course, utilizing scientific research to learn how to respond to animals and or how to reduce sick, injured, diseased animals. And then, of course, once again, educate people, which is what we're all here to do. So tell your friends about the Marine Mammal Center.
Conservation tips of the week. Angie, We're going to talk plastics, of course. We're talking about the ocean. And did you know, I got this off a website, greeneducationfoundation.org, that 30 million tons of plastic waste generated in the United States, only 7% of it was recycled. So I don't know if this is a little bit older data, but I don't know.
Well, no, we're
I'm
having a
sure
big problem
it's not
here.
Much higher.
Well,
you know, we don't
know about people
much.
Actually putting stuff mm-hmm. in their blue bins and orange bins or whatever color they are in your city, which some yeah. people do. I don't know the statistics on that, but we're having a real crisis in the United States because yeah. a lot of our plastic that we historically have shipped to China to recycle, because we don't have a lot of facilities mm-hmm. here. Unfortunately, there's not enough demand. So everybody should write big companies like Coca-Cola and any bottled water company, whatever, yeah. and demand that they, even if they raise their prices a little bit, like please use recycle. If you're going to use plastic, which obviously you are, use recycled plastic because here in the States, we don't have yeah. a market yeah. for it. And so we've been shipping it to China, where allegedly there is a market for it. They buy it from us and then they reuse it. But now China, I don't understand, probably, I don't know if it's like administration relations or what, politics. I don't know why, but they're not accepting it anymore. Yeah. So there was just a 60 Minutes episode where now we're shipping it over somewhere else in Asia and maybe like Vietnam or something. And yeah, nobody really knows. I mean, they're buying it from us, but yeah, they're buying it from us, but are they recycling it? And basically the news reporters were like, we don't know. Probably not. Like it's probably going into a landfill or into an ocean.
Yeah, it's not good.
Here in North America, we need to vote with our dollar and tell people that we need more places to use recycled plastic.
Yeah. And this is where our listeners come in to be heroes and help us spread the message, you know, share this podcast and share these tips. So we did joke a little bit about straws in the ocean, but it's actually a big problem. So we've got to keep demanding not to use plastic straws, refuse them in restaurants.
Carry your own.
You know, if you must have a straw, get the stainless steel or glass straws, or they're even making paper straws now. So some other tips, you know, use matches instead of disposable plastic lighters, or invest in a refillable metal lighter if you can. Here's one interesting I thought. Avoid buying frozen foods. Not only are frozen foods processed and not as healthy, but even if it's cardboard, you know, packaging, always, it's still covered in a thin layer of plastic. So you can do that. Yeah. Buy fresh food. Here you go. For your kiddos or for people that do want to have kids, the Environmental Protection Agency here in the US says we produce 7.6 billion pounds of disposable diapers in the US each year. Use cloth diapers if you can.
Yes. I've got some for sale.
We did cloth diapers.
Yeah. Email us if you want some. I'll give them to you.
Yeah. Jane will send them to you. But it will really help save you money, which is a big
absolutely.
One, and also reduce your carbon footprint.
And I have no scientific proof, so I shouldn't be saying this since I am a scientist, but mm-hmm. I believe that my boys potty train faster because of cloth diapers. Because they're not made as well as disposable, so
not as comfy.
They feel the wetness more because they're of the age, mm-hmm. you know, when they hit the age of where that matters, two or so, they don't like that feeling. Whereas disposable.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So disposable diapers, you know, they're made. There's so much, whatever that weird jelly stuff, who knows what it is in there can absorb so much. They don't, it doesn't bother them.
They don't care. They don't care. Yeah. There you go. So there's a, anecdotal evidence. Also, you know, you want to pack it. If you bring your lunch, put it in reusable containers and bags, you know, use fresh fruit and veggies. Don't buy those single use plastic cups. And finally, I thought this was good. Use a razor with replaceable blades instead of a disposable razor.
Absolutely.
So there's just some tips, and I'll post these on the website in our show notes.
And I don't know if we've done it yet, but I'm a big fan now. We've gotten rid of Saran wrap, and we use the beeswax sheets.
Paper.
Well, companies are selling them now. I don't know I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but yeah, they're reusable, basically like beeswax made sheets that you put over whatever the can of coconut milk or whatever you open and you put it in your fridge or on top of your watermelon so it stays fresh or what anything you do Saran wrap for.
Yeah.
Who needs it? It's not good for the oceans.
Get rid of plastic. Now, at the beginning of the podcast, I talked to you a little bit about great white sharks and elephant seals. So this study that I read, and again, I'll post this on the show notes too. This was studying northern elephant seals off San Francisco or the Farallon Islands. And the young elephant seals come and haul out from September through November. And so these sharks are tagged, and they've done studies for 20 years plus. Now, elephant seals are bigger than, you know, obviously they're huge compared to other seals. So they can't go as far off the beach. And what they found is the great white sharks know when they come, and they go through the channels, and they kind of stay near the channels where the elephant seals are coming and going. They found that the great white sharks prefer elephant seals 7-1 to any other type of seal.
Interesting.
Probably because of that blubber. I don't know.
Yeah,
or
exactly,
all that blood. Yeah. I don't know. Now, here you go, Angie. For me and all my friends in California, they estimate that there's either a few hundred or a few thousand great white sharks off the California coast.
That's a big difference.
A few thousand. Yes, I know. I was like, what? But great white shark attacks are rare. There's 1 to 2 per year, and there's about a single death every 10 years off California. So you actually have a 100 times greater chance of drowning than you do being attacked by a great white.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Or getting killed by a cow. What's the cow stats in the U.S.? 28 cows kill people per year. 28 people killed per year for cows. So, you know, interesting stuff. This was fun. This was a fun one. I knew it would be a fun species. A wonderful species. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, you're our heroes. Thank you for listening. Share this episode with your ocean-loving friends. I know I will.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone. Aloha and goodbye.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.